When I first came to Brookhaven Town, way, hey, 90.1, there wasn't good music to be heard around, way, hey, 90.1. Then one day I turned on the dial, way, hey, 90.1. There I found music to make me smile, way, hey, 90.1. I waited for a legal ID, way, hey, 90.1. The DJ said WUSB, way, hey, 90.1. They start each day with the rising sun. Way, hey, 90.1. Don't ever finish till after day is done. Way, hey, 90.1. So if you want good music to hear. Way, hey, 90.1. There's a station in Stony Brook you ought to hear. Way, hey, 90.1. So if you like the sounds, do take a look. Way, hey, 90.1. At WUSB Stony Brook. Hey, hey, hey.
And that's WUSB Stony Brook operating at 90.1 FM and 107.3 FM and at WUSB.FM on the Internet. It's 6 o'clock on a Tuesday evening. Time once again for Off the Wall. very good evening. All right, program is off the wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this Tuesday evening. Joined tonight by Kyle.
Over there.
Yeah. And it's a rather blustery day today. It's even snowing a little bit. It doesn't really mean it, but there's snow coming out of the sky. It's not really sticking. You know what? I'm just going to forget this winter ever happened, because it didn't happen. And we'll just try to have two winters next year.
Yeah, this is the wintry mix, I think is what they like to call it. But it's a real slap in the face. It's a real insult. It's a spit in the face.
People are canceling appointments and just, you know, driving extra idiotically. It's nothing. It's funny, you know, when we do have winter, you have that first storm where everybody freaks out, and then the next one, not so much, and then three or four in, people don't even talk about it anymore. It's just part of life. And that's how it is up north. You know, people get used to it. But this year, we never got to get used to it, so it's March, and we're freaking out over a wintry mix.
Well, there's also this atmospheric river thing that's been
Talking about atmospheric rivers all of a sudden? I've never heard that phrase before, and I'm hearing it all the time now, especially with California. Do you know what it is?
Not really.
Okay, so both of us brought it up, and we don't know what it means.
Basically, someone broke the polar vortex, and it's, like, splitting into pieces and going all over crazy style, and no one, and then they throw this weather jargon in at us. But it's snowing everywhere but here, and it's wrong. It's not the...
I mean, do you remember bomb cyclones a couple of years ago?
Oh, can you believe that term?
Yeah, that was the weather phrase of the week, and now it's atmospheric rivers. Can't you just say it's going to rain, it's going to snow, it's going to not do anything?
Well...
Stay inside, folks. If you're listening to us locally in the Long Island area, it's not a good night to be driving because it's kind of windy.
Yeah, we won't downplay any of the dangers. No. There is a chance of what has been pretty wet becoming ice, so driving conditions
that could happen
are extreme. Mm-hmm. Nonetheless, it could get cooler in a heartbeat. It could turn... The conditions are changing rapidly, so do be careful on steep... inclines.
Didn't we try to figure out a couple of years ago why ice has to be slippery? I don't think we ever got an answer. But it seems to me that you could have ice that wasn't slippery. And then think about how much safer it would be, you know, when things got icy outside. But
what if snow... Yeah, like if snow was sticky.
Well, snow is sticky. That's how it accumulates. But ice doesn't have to be slippery. I don't see the point in that.
Yeah, when it becomes solid, then it's very, very slippery.
You know what? I'm going to start a new feature called Notes to Nature. Little notes that I write intended to help with nature. Like, nature, maybe, you know, don't do this. It would be easier and more efficient if it worked this way. I don't know.
Well, this will help.
Someone else not to listen to me.
Well, they'll listen in intently. To at least see if that's a sort of a new direction, a new discovery that mm-hmm. you've made in those observations. But it's a good thing to do. Verify, watch what's going on with the weather. This will help you forget weather, though. Spring Radiothon's coming up.
Is it?
Aren't you? I mean, how else can you feel winter just being ignored completely? But yeah, I'm really excited. Apparently, we're getting a different dance troupe in the tally room.
Oh,
this
no,
year.
Not,
yeah.
again. Not again.
I know. You remember how it happened last...
Yeah, have not the legal ramifications of that one worn off yet. I mean, boy, that's... I still remember that kick to the head that I witnessed.
The spinning.
That was something.
Yep. No one can. It always comes
it's
up.
It's too small a room for that. It's just, you can't have that kind of dance move. I understand the passion behind it, but...
A costume like that, though, just doesn't... I mean, you're getting in the door, you have to go silent.
That wasn't Radiothon, though. That was the quest for Starbucks.
Right, I know, yeah. I know. But they did show up when we were as excited between some of those events.
Well, they
practice.
Showed up looking for checks afterwards. That's why I was hiding.
Yeah, and they did. I noticed they didn't have the drums and stuff. They were just here.
No, they had like the weapons and stuff.
Whoa!
Yeah. No, they're serious about it.
Well,
this is not for on the air. I mean, we should be.
I just wanted to impart to the listeners that's why we are so terribly excited around here. And a big shout out to all the producers
yes.
and volunteers behind the scenes of WSB that are gearing up and really big changes. A lot of improvements are coming.
That's,
and
that's what I hear, yeah.
Everyone's excited to talk about it
well,
and
sometimes
share.
Sometimes I'm happy we're at 25% power because sometimes I don't want certain things to be heard. But that's going to change. In the very near future, we'll be getting our brand new transmitter, and we'll also be improving our translator, which is the other 107.3 frequency. So, you know, good things are ahead for WUSB, that's for sure.
And when you're making plans in the next couple months, think of pledging, because that continuing support goes to all of our endeavors here to spread information of all various types and formatting. Really, eclectic is a great term, but freeform is how we say it in this particular corner of the dial. And we're just excited to bring just a little sliver of that in our conversations and discussions about news. And so, yes. Please participate when we start pledging and appealing for your support, because that's how the magic happens. That's how a lot of stuff behind the scenes happens.
Mm-hmm.
And we're excited. So that's why I'm so bright and bushy-tailed. That's why you saw me like just so effervescent, just bouncing.
I was going to ask about that, but
well, I just heard about that. I thought I should tell everybody.
Uh-huh. Okay, well, you know, that's something to look forward to. Lots of other things coming down the pike, I presume, that we have to look forward to as well. But for this hour, we're going to be focusing on things that are happening in the world. What do you hear about the banks that are failing? What's going on with that? The Silicon Valley Bank and the Signature Bank. I never heard of either one of them. One's in New York City and one is in Silicon Valley, as you might guess from the name.
Apparently, they're like your just small-town mom-and-pop investment vehicle.
Well, I think Silicon Valley was like the 15th biggest bank in the country, I think.
Right, but they don't need any kind of like, you know, oversight and regulation or
well,
apparently they don't need deposit insurance either.
Here's the thing. There were regulations, right? There were regulations up until Trump. And Trump got rid of these regulations. This is the thing that really gets me. It really annoys the hell out of me. Basically, you have a situation where two banks fail, and it could be a catastrophe. It could have been a catastrophe. Fortunately, Biden directed a method of basically saving the depositors and not having them lose all their money in a bank, which is something that, you know, in this country, we're supposed to pretty much be guaranteed not to have happen. And what Republicans are doing in response to this is basically accusing him of supporting big banks, which these are not, and not supporting places like East Palestine, you know, a place where the freight train. These are just lies, complete and utter lies. Because all kinds of support is going to that community, and banks are supposed to be protected, or the depositors are supposed to be protected from banks that go under. So all of this is exactly what should be happening. And you know, I'm just trying to get my head around what Republicans want. They want banks to fail. They certainly do. They want banks to fail under Biden, so they can point the finger and say, aha, banks failed under you. They basically are turning into a very destructive party. They just want to see failure, and they'll stop at nothing to get it. And then when they have it, they'll have a political advantage, or so they think. But it's shameful seeing the way that this is being responded to on their side. I know you were doing a little bit of research into this yourself.
I'm listening to what you're saying. I feel your sentiment too. I lived through a big part of this and was experienced a lot of the after effects as a new entrant, more or less. I had actually been working for a very, very long time before the Great Recession. But indeed, there was reforms and consumer protections. They were put in place. The actual bill was called the Dodd-Frank Wall Street Reform and Consumer Protection Act.
Dodd-Frank, I remember that.
Uh-huh. Barney Frank and I believe I don't know the other
somebody named
Dodd.
Dodd is. Yeah, there's a Dodd in there somewhere.
But the whole
if you scroll down one line, it says Congressman Barney Frank. Obviously, the next sentence is going to be the next person's name.
Chris Dodd.
Chris
Dodd. Connecticut.
There you go.
There you go. So anyway, it was about making changes and reforms, and then in 2018, the 45th president took a lot of these protections that were put in place away.
Why would you do that? Why would you take them away?
I was just thinking as you were talking about, okay, well, what were the virtues going in before a lot of this happened? And, you know, some of the places I was involved with had investments, and, you know, there was a lot of new metal, new things moving around, you know, industries, burgeoning industries like clean energy and that kind of stuff was getting attention and needed to be, you know, this, now we gotta transition for 10 more years. Well, you know, this was beyond 10 years ago. And in any event, after that recession, a lot of tumult and unemployment and after effects were the other side of that boom. And I think the dot-com era when I was a student, I think, is also very instructive to how I think about it. But the idea that we just need to relax all of the controls and not have good investments or investments that have been really soundly informed and been thought through, and that just I think is where when there are industries that are starting out that need this kind of capital, they have to get it in a reliable way. It can't be this flimsy. It can't be from places and institutions that are speculating this way. And so anyway, what happened now is not quite the same. I think the things that were going on during the Great Recession were involved in real estate. And but I think the reforms and consumer protections would have helped all the same. And if anybody else wants to hear someone really lay it down, Elizabeth Warren wrote an interesting editorial piece about this in the New York Times. And, and it just states that basically removing a lot of this, we've been down this road before, basically. Mm-hmm. And this is what happens when you have this unfettered, out of control leadership without guardrails and stuff that protects people, the everyday people. And I think one line that she points out that is really glaring now is just how easily, yes, industries that wouldn't otherwise be able to be financed and they might not work out totally, you know, they could fail individually. They do have to have a place to get investment, but, there's a lot of people that were invested in the form of student loans who don't get the same kind of bailout and so forth. So the quickness to save these institutions that are places for a lot of speculation and people who have less at stake mm-hmm. than individuals in the realm of student loans. So there's a little bit of paradox and hypocrisy in some of this.
You think?
You know, some of this didn't deserve to be sustained, at least these tactics. You know, it's very, very risky. And I guess the whole thing is surrounding interest rates and how they had invested in treasury bonds, which were traditionally a sort of stable investment, but that caused a run on this bank. And because a lot of the investment capital and that was stored in the bank was really, really high numbers for these kinds of new ventures. It wasn't insurable. It's beyond the FDIC insurance level, like $250,000, I think is what it is, mm-hmm. or somewhere in that ballpark. So it's not the same as like individual.
Yeah, if you have up to $250,000 in a bank, you're covered. Mm-hmm. And I don't know why anybody would have more than that in a bank. If you're that rich, I would imagine you're investing money in something. Because having it in a bank, you're not getting much back for that. You know, very, very little interest.
Yeah, and especially with, like, private stuff. This is, like, pre-New York Stock Exchange. So, okay, everybody out here is definitely familiar with public companies. But in private funding, you know, you might just only have a couple connections and you can't really, maybe you're not known enough to get, like, six banks to go in on, like, one particular project that and divide it up that well, or you're not structured in the same way, and you're just going with, like, whatever offers or whoever might be interested in whatever bank they're using mm-hmm. as a venture angel or whatever the hell they want to call themselves. But the individual accounts, nonetheless, like that, that money still has an impact in the wider economy. So it's not like it's not going to be felt. And there are a lot of other accounts, like things you're familiar with. I think Roku was one of the companies that was in one of these banks.
Oh, no, not Roku.
Oh, no. They have a hard enough time keeping their machines working.
Keeping their apps from crashing constantly, yeah. But I'm not going to get into that right
everybody
now.
On their streaming TVs, wow. They better...
Well, I feel better about it now.
Think kindly. Yeah, some of these companies might have a feeling that they deserve it seriously.
But the thing is, you know, what Biden did was he was able to find the money in some place that the banks had put a lot of money, you know, billions of dollars. So I said, hey, there's the money. You guys, you know, deal with this. Didn't cost taxpayers anything. Of course, you know, Republicans are lying about that again, saying that it did. It did not. It seems like we're in a place now where it doesn't matter what the facts are. Republicans will just lie about it and say, no, it's you know, you're wrong. This is the way it is, even though the facts prove that that's not the case. And you can prove it. Doesn't matter if you do prove it, because if you do prove it, whatever evidence you used to prove it, that's part of the conspiracy now. You know, whatever sources you use, they're working with you. You can never win. You can never ever convince these people, and I never expected to do that, but, you know, just basically being able to win the argument. You can't even walk away feeling like you did because they just refuse to accept reality. It's a sickness. It's a sickness, and I don't know how much worse it's going to get. I think maybe what we're going to see now is we're going to see some of them tearing each other apart. And that'll be a welcome relief because you have, you know, DeSantis and Trump now, you know, in slow motion heading towards each other to have some kind of a debate at some point. That'll be fun. You have people who will never support anyone but Trump. Never. And you just have to wonder what that's going to do to their party because I think, you know, seeing what was revealed with Fox News, you know, seeing their text messages, which is what a gift to be able to see the internal text messaging at Fox News, to see what Tucker Carlson really thought. Not that I care what he really thinks, but to see what a hypocrite he is and how he didn't believe anything he was saying, how he agreed that Trump was a complete disaster, hated his guts. Imagine if we had all been on the same page all along. None of this would have happened. None of the horror that we've gone through, all the setbacks that we've experienced, none of that would have happened. But the people at Fox News, you can give them credit because if it weren't for Fox News, and I know now there are other even crazier networks out there, but back then it was pretty much just them. If they weren't there to do that, I think things would have gone very, very differently. We'd be in a completely different place now. So blame them. Blame them and act accordingly. You know, take your Optimum remote with you. You know, the TV remote. And if you ever see anybody with in a store with a TV on that's tuned to Fox News, well, hit the keys to block it. They'll never figure out how to unblock it. I know that's not, you know, in keeping with, oh, freedom of speech. Everybody has, yeah, okay, but that's my speech. My speech is to turn that crap off. My speech is to fight back for once and to, you know, to stop taking it. Because what they've done to us is horrible. They've hurt the country so much They've set us back decades, if not more. And yeah, you know, a little action against them, I think, is a good thing now. I really do.
Yeah, I don't feel responsible for fixing it so much. As you say, I think, like, it's a sort of freedom of sanity that's coming along with other people's definitions of, mm-hmm. of freedom. And these sort of assumption that people want to listen to that in any kind of public or semi-public space is, I think, an assumption that's made mostly out of fear that most people or that they might encounter a public who'd be upset if they were watching anything but that at their bank or at some banal space.
Look, I'm not going to come into your house. I'm not going to come into your house and turn off your TV set or turn your channel from Fox News. But if I'm in a mall or, you know, walking down Main Street and somebody is blaring that crap out from their store, which is, you know, trying to entice me to go inside, well, my first step inside is to make the environment a little more pleasant. And by silencing that particular source of garbage, I've done just that. And I think we can come up with all kinds of electronic devices that can be programmed depending on who your carrier is. Do you have DirecTV? Do you have Dish Network? Do you have Optimum? Do you have a Spectrum? They all have different keystrokes to block Fox News, and you have to make it unwatchable. Let's do that. Let's have some fun. Let's make them hurt. They've made us hurt. Let's make them hurt back. I'm all for it.
They have kind of earned, like, being on mute. Just this whole scandal and Rupert Murdoch's testimony.
They are not a news channel. Stop calling them a news channel. My God. I mean, okay, you know, if you want to have lies, fine. You know, that's what they do. But you have to recognize that's what it is. It's not news. If you make it the same as legitimate news, you know, like BBC or Al Jazeera, which, you know, people in this country don't see, but it is so much better. They have actual journalistic standards that Fox does not have. They are not worthy of being in the same conversation. So that's all I'm going to say about that. Okay, so Joe Biden signed some gun background check executive order today. Yeah, he signed an executive order aimed at increasing background checks to buy guns, promoting more secure firearm storage, and ensuring U.S. law enforcement agencies get more out of a bipartisan gun control law enacted last summer. Okay, everything I just read, why would anybody oppose that? Why would anybody oppose that? But they do. They do. You know, the number of mass shootings in places like Texas and Florida, you know what the reaction to that has been? Everybody can have guns now. Yeah, you don't even need a permit. Just go get your guns. Doesn't matter. No training. No, in fact, training, we're going to oppose training because somehow that violates your rights. It's sick. It's sickness. We have to start recognizing it as such. So Biden was basically, he has stronger rhetoric about guns, routinely calling for banning assault weapons.
There's a theme of responsiveness here with the president, I think you're getting at.
Yeah.
Because that thing with the finance stuff, that's without the regulations. Mm-hmm. And they were responsive enough to point it out and say, look, we're going to step in.
That's right.
I mean, continue. I'm
listening. He's been emboldened by the midterm elections, where, you know, the Democratic Party did much better than expected. His regular talk of gun control didn't result in massive losses. He's expected to continue to argue for strong changes as he inches toward a 2024 re-election run. And can we just accept that he's going to run for re-election in 2024 and embrace that? You know, I'm talking about Democrats out there and liberals. Yeah, I know we're not getting everything we want, I'm very upset about the Alaska thing, absolutely. But show me something better that we're going to have for 2024. There's nothing. There is absolutely nothing. So we need to put everything behind this, or we're going to wind up with another nightmare. Whether it's DeSantis or Trump, we're going to live in a country where basically all kinds of rights will be taken away. You think Roe versus Wade was something? That's nothing compared to what we're going to be seeing. The constant attacks on the gay and trans communities, you know, it's going to become racial after that. You know, this so-called war on woke, which is a sickness that the Republicans have conjured up to basically spread hatred towards anybody that wants to be inclusive, that wants equality, and somehow paralleling that with hardline communists, which is absurd. It's funny, but for those people who don't know what it is they're actually talking about, that's their reality. And we need to speak up. We need to be a lot louder as far as saying you're being fed a load of garbage. I don't know how many times we can just keep saying that. You know, we need ways to fight back strongly. These laws that are being implemented, laws against drag, you know, the whole anti-drag thing is insane as far as a political strategy. I don't get it. They've decided that these people, the drag queens, are somehow a threat and are basically working on commission to get your kids to turn into drag queens themselves. Nothing could be further from the truth. You know, I was looking online through some news stories. Turns out there's a whole lot of people take their kids to Hooters. Take their damn kids to Hooters. And that isn't an issue. That's not exposing kids to sexualized content at all. That's not grooming them. That's not influencing them in any way. No, that's perfectly acceptable. But somebody dressed up reading a story in a library, oh, my God, that is the worst thing imaginable. Wow. It's just, words are failing me. How did we get here? You know, we allowed ourselves to get to this particular point. I remember, you know, the race for governor in Virginia a couple of years ago, where a guy who lost, his name escapes me at the moment, made the mistake of saying that teachers should decide what gets taught to students, not parents, which makes perfect sense because they're teachers, you know. And that's what lost him the election, because these parents were outraged that their kids, because they read this as their kids are about to be indoctrinated by these communist teachers that are going to basically teach their kids to change sex and all sorts of insanity. And how do you fight that? You know, there just doesn't seem to be any way to fight it. It's it gets repeated over and over again on Fox News and all these other places. And people actually think that's reality.
Yeah, it makes it sort of pseudo-shocking or something that's not very well understood and not certainly not a hugely mainstream part of our culture. And then that lack of sort of widespread understanding of it in any kind of normal sense makes it something that they can fill in with a lot of stereotypes and discrimination and so forth.
Mm-hmm. I feel sorry for kids.
It's,
you know,
it's so sad.
They talk about in this hypocritical way about leaving the kids alone. Why don't they leave the kids alone? Why don't they let the kids be kids instead of steering them into these very rigid pathways that they've devised? And creating enemies where there are none, and basically just insisting that their kids conform to whatever it is they decide their kids will be. You know, it's we're going to hear horror stories out of this in the years to come because of the sickness that they're being exposed to. Here's something that is just happening, actually. There's a new hotline that lets parents report teachers directly to the state if they think they're teaching anything inappropriate. Oh, yes. George Orwell is here. This is Arizona, by the way. It's part of the GOP-led effort to keep critical race theory out of classrooms, even though critical race theory isn't in the damn classrooms. How many times do you have to say that? You know, every single time I see a news story about this, it's about the threat of critical race theory. And there's always a little tag in the story saying, there is no evidence to suggest that critical race theory is being taught in classrooms. You know, in grade school or high school classrooms, in college, that's a different thing. It's up to the university, obviously. But they say that every single time, but the story doesn't go away. They keep coming up with these other stories saying, yeah, they're doing this to fight critical race theory, even though it doesn't exist. The hotline is open to all complaints and has a lot of teachers on edge. State Superintendent Tom Horn believes this hotline will give parents more say in their child's education. On the other hand, the head of the state teachers union has concerns that it could be abused and will only worsen the teacher shortage. If they are using their position to push their personal ideology on a captive audience of kids, that is wrong and they need to stop. You know, I don't know why they added that quote after the teachers that are concerned. That's the state superintendent saying that. He is in favor of the hotline. But you know what? It's more likely that the parents are pushing their ideology on the kids than teachers. It really is.
Not only that, but trying to set a tone in the entire district or in the entire school that other kids have to conform to what they understand as acceptable in their household.
Yeah, I just realized I'm reading from a website called Arizona's Family, so I think this might be a little bit biased because it keeps quoting the guy that is in favor of it and nobody who is not in favor of it. I keep saying the same words. It's a sickness. It's insane. I need more words. I need more words.
That's a good term. It seems harsh, but I don't think there's any other way to say it. There's this, it's unfortunate because there's like so much that society could benefit from. And I think even from the Republican side, things like expenditures or oversight on banks, like that is the kind of pragmatic conservative expertise that you would like to imagine would come from that side of the aisle, but it doesn't exist that way anymore. They want to destroy these things just to blame someone else for it and push through the kind of cronyism that they approve of, and people aren't having it. They're picking a fight with a formidable, like just the drag thing. Like you are picking a community that has been fighting the entire time, nonstop. So I get that their impression, their stereotype that they are dealing with, weaker or defenseless minorities that won't stop them from filling in this sort of lack of widespread representation of, you know, the virtues and the positive impact that creating a space for drag and other kinds of performers in the community has in general on people's mental health. That somehow they're going to be degraded by all of this, and I think they're going to be sorely surprised.
Well, I hope so, and I hope there's more drag queens than ever and supporters who show up and fight this fiercely. This cannot stand. This cannot become normal. I finally found a quote from somebody who was opposing this. It's really hard to do in the Arizona papers. First, we have to sit through another quote from the guy behind it all, schools chief Tom Horn, basically saying, some say critical race theory is a graduate study not taught in K-12 schools. In fact, we just said that. The evidence is to the contrary. Oh, do tell us. Do tell us the evidence to the contrary. I have a list of 250 Arizona teachers who signed a shocking statement promoted by the National Teachers Union that if critical race theory were banned, they would defy the law. They would not have signed it if they were not already teaching it. Okay, you know, I don't have that in front of me, but even I know that's not what happened. I know they did not sign a statement saying, oh, we will teach critical race theory in K-12. This guy is lying through his teeth. So now let's find the quote from somebody else. Oh, yeah, the president of the Arizona Education Association, Marisol Garcia, saying, is teachers saying they are committed to teaching accurate history, which is not what he is talking about. CRT is not being taught in schools. It doesn't matter how many times you say it, though. They'll just keep lying. They'll just keep coming back saying that it's being taught in schools, and they will basically interpret anything that goes against what they want to hear as critical race theory. If you teach something about slavery, well, that's critical race theory because you're making white people feel bad. This is what it's coming to. You know, it starts with drag queens, but it goes all the way into American history, and it has to be whitewashed and sanitized so that nobody looks bad. Well, I'm sorry, history makes a lot of people look bad, and we absolutely have to teach it the right way. And can you imagine what will happen if a whole generation of kids are taught complete fiction as to what their country stands for? It's
Well, what lies will they be well primed for accepting and allowing and not stopping?
Yeah,
that's the stake. You know, the stakes for the future. That's what is at stake. That's why we're pointing this out, and we all should play a part in understanding how societies are created around this. They're going for education because they know that they can indoctrinate people. People that have not yet had experience in the world, haven't been educated, and by shaping all of that, they can try to build a base of gullible and well-primed individuals for their ideologies.
We're going to give you the information about this hotline so that you know how to reach it and you know how to... basically send your own feedback. But first, Kyle, you want to try actually getting a call to this thing?
My privilege.
Yes. Let's see what it actually says, what it sounds like. We haven't done this yet, so we might be somewhat surprised. A hotline to report teachers for teaching something inappropriate to your child in Arizona. Let's listen.
Thank you for calling the Empower Hotline at the Arizona Department of Education. If this is an emergency or you are reporting either a crime or an incident of inappropriate sexual contact, you should hang up and call 911 to notify your local policy authorities. You are advised to also call the school administration immediately. To continue in English, press 1. To continue... You can make a report about inappropriate lessons that detract from teaching academic standards, such as those that focus on race or ethnicity, rather than individuals and merit, promoting gender ideology, social-emotional learning, or inappropriate sexual content. Please be advised that all calls are monitored and recorded for quality and training purposes. Thank you for holding. We apologize for the delay. Please continue holding for the next available agent.
Yeah, let's get rid of
these calls. Calls are answered in the order they are received.
Okay. All right. So that's it. That's the hotline. It's actually not in service yet. It's in service tomorrow night. I don't know why it starts at night, but that's when it begins. So if your kid's teacher brings up race... Yeah, they can talk about slavery. They just can't mention that one particular race did it to another particular race. I guess that's inappropriate. Any kind of sexual content of any sort, inappropriate. You know, it's. Let me explain what that means. If a teacher, say, has a same-sex partner, can't bring that up. It's okay to bring up a different sex partner. For some reason, that's not an issue. But if you do that, you know what we're talking about here. I think there's a lot of winking and nodding going on here. Anyway, the phone number for people who would like to call this thing and leave your own messages, get a pen, and please share the information. It's area code 602-771-3500. That's 602-771-3500. And they have an email address, too, which is empower, E-M-P-O-W-E-R, at azed.gov. I guess Arizona Education or something. That's empower at azed.gov. The phone line will be staffed during normal business hours, but after-hours phone calls as well as emails will be accepted at any time and followed up appropriately. We'll see about that. And that's just one state. That's just Arizona. this kind of garbage is happening everywhere on so many different levels. You know, drag shows banned in Tennessee completely, in any public place or any place that a kid might somehow see it. Of course, bring a kid to Hooters, that's okay, not a problem.
It's going to be somber during some of the parades this year, and it doesn't have to be. It doesn't have to be like this, but scapegoating can be indiscriminate. But this is pretty upsetting, I think, to a lot of people that just understand the depths of cynicism and cruelty that this will inevitably create in different people's society and, you know, their walks of life. I mean, it's just tragic. I really, my heart goes out to people that are going to be impacted by this. And it's got to stop.
And again, this is just one example. What Republicans are doing throughout this country is shameful. It is shameful what they are doing to democracy. Remember when that creep Lee Zeldin was running for governor? And he said one of the first things he was going to do was remove an elected district attorney because he didn't like what he was saying or something. Just he was uppity, I don't know, just basically was saying things that he thought he shouldn't say or do.
He had a multi-part question.
He just basically wanted him out, even though he was elected, and he thought that he could do that. Well, apparently that's the MO for Republicans, because that's what Ron DeSantis did in Florida. He basically removed a local prosecutor from his job who was twice elected and you know, with a good margin, too, for Hillsborough County. And, of course, he was a Democrat. He had signed a public pledge not to prosecute those who seek or provide abortions. Imagine that. And that's all it took. That's all it took. DeSantis said left-leaning prosecutors like this had undermined public safety and been devastating to the rule of law. Left unsaid, however, according to this New York Times piece, was that Mr. DeSantis and his advisors had failed to find a connection between Andrew Warren's policies and public safety in his community. In fact, just the day before, writing in blue pen on a draft of an executive order, the governor had personally removed any mention of crime statistics justifying Mr. Warren's suspension, after Mr. DeSantis' lawyers lamented they could not find anything in them to support the idea that the prosecutor's policies had done harm, according to internal documents and testimony. But got rid of him anyway. Yeah, that's how they see democracy.
And
really,
that's what I meant by, like, you know, when you have a bipartisanship, people at least willing to, like, stop with the things they disagree on and actually move on something together. You get expertise from different perspectives and different sides of the argument, so to speak. And you lose that. Mm-hmm. You lose that when you just have some petty grievance and you have power. You've been granted power, however, you know, ill God, and you use it in this way to people that have experience, who devoted their lifetime to public service or had themselves a mandate through an election and a democratic process, and you just go and, like, flip the table over and make a mess and expect everybody else to clean up for it and ever forgive you.
Yeah. Shifting gears here, I don't know if you saw the results last week, Oklahoma. Voters, by a large margin, rejected recreational marijuana.
Foolishly, I think is the last part.
Yeah, well, the other thing that's interesting, we noticed this when we were driving through Oklahoma.
We drove through there.
There are a lot of dispensaries, but they're medical dispensaries. But they're estimated that 1 in 10 people, I assume it's adults, or maybe it's everybody, 1 in 10 people are signed up for medical marijuana. So it's not like it's not around. It's all over the place. But
and they're not, like, heavily patrolled or, like, inspected, so to speak. It's just they're there. It's a part of this law that doesn't really have a formal structure behind it. Mm-hmm. Therefore, it's persisting in this sort of a gray area that works for people locally, I imagine. But the long-term viability, you know, how vulnerable it is to the political whims, the winds changing, and someone getting in and trying to disrupt that. What impact does that have on people that are caregivers or people that are patients that aren't really involved in all of that, but depending on it to do, you know, any number of things in their daily life, because they have to, you know, deal with pain, you know, pain management or some chronic condition, right. Or maybe they just work four jobs and can't sleep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think maybe the pro-legalization people didn't take this as seriously as they should have. The numbers suggest that to me, because they're big. It's practically 2-1 against. And I think this came about two ways. A, people not taking it seriously enough, not showing up, saying, oh, you know, I've got my medical card, I don't need this. Yeah, okay, kind of selfish and short-sighted, but understandable. But also, maybe other people got a bad impression, maybe because people are being careless.
That's where that gray zone can have a negative impact.
This is something that we have to be very, very careful about. And you know, for me, I am very passionately against edibles that look like something that would appeal to kids. I cannot believe they get away with this. They shouldn't get away with this. That should be changed. It's bad for everybody, and it's laziness and you know, basically allowing it to continue that winds up hurting movements like this. There was and here this brings us back to Republican strategy here. South Dakota back in 2020, voters approved legalizing marijuana. Yeah, do you know about this? In South Dakota, voters approved the recreational use of marijuana. But, you know, when voters approve something and Republicans don't want it, it doesn't happen. Yeah, do you remember in Florida where people, by a wide margin, said convicted felons should be allowed to vote? Well, didn't happen because the Republicans said no. That's too many Democrats that will be voting, so we're going to make it hard for them. We're going to say you have to pay every single penny of your fines over decades before you can actually vote. And there have been cases where people have tried to vote and have been arrested and put back in prison because they dared to try to vote. This is after people, by a huge number, said convicted felons in Florida should have the right to vote. Doesn't matter what you say. It just got taken away anyway. So in South Dakota, something similar happened where basically people said, yeah, let's legalize marijuana. And no, we're going to put it through the courts, and the courts say no. So you don't get to do that. But we will come up with another initiative, ask you again in 2022, and basically make it look worse, and you'll reject it. And that's what the people did. They rejected it. So, you know, they accept it, and it gets basically thrown into the courts by the people who don't want it, and then rewritten so that it'll fail, it fails, and that's the people's will. And that's your democracy.
It's not right. Mm-hmm. It's unfortunate, too. But I think it has a lot to do with the burgeoning industry. There's a lot of misunderstanding there, too. So the and the enthusiasm, it's notoriously lackluster with the cannabis slacker crowd, right? Mm-hmm. That stereotype actually, politically, unless it's a consistent, constant effort, and that has decent messaging and visibility in a state, it's terribly hard to keep people's focus on that, especially when there's other political initiatives and propositions and stuff going on in people's state. They don't have time to sit around and, you know, gather signatures and change local zoning ordinance and so forth. But it's important. And I think if people understood the possibilities in something that has been totally off, you know, an entire commodity that's been off limits, just how bad things like the labeling and recreational side can be without an established sort of reliable structure there, you get this sort of floundering and lack of productivity, and it just doesn't have a solid foundation, and those opportunities are lost when you don't even give it, you know, a chance when people are for it, with that kind of, I don't know, I guess I've been saying cronyism a lot, but this, lining up of different interests and people pulling the different political levers locally and, you know, using their connections and sort of conservative networks or, you know, disinterested networks to be malleable in the face of the traditional legislative route, mm-hmm. in kind of obstructing and basically diluting the impact, right. of the voters' will.
Well, you know, we're lucky we're here in New York. Not so lucky on Long Island, because I think something like 80% of the communities, counties, towns on Long Island have basically opted out of having dispensaries. But we're in Brookhaven, and that's one of the towns that is allowing it. There are three others, Babylon, Riverhead, and Southampton, the towns, not the villages. It could include the villages as well. But basically, that means that dispensaries can open in those places. And I'm told that probably next month, April, is when we'll start seeing some action on that on Long Island. I think, you know, if we make it work on Long Island as well as it possibly can, I've seen it work really well in many places, like, you know, Massachusetts, Illinois. When people see how positive that is, you'll see the minds change. You'll see more towns come on board, and that'll be the success story. But we have to do a good job. We have to have good places, good prices, you know, good products that are basically kept out of the hands of kids, which is, you know, in everybody's interest. And then from there, we'll be able to have an example.
It sets a baseline for zoning, all the way the retail look is, down to like packaging and labeling and testing and, you know, having the quantities identified. That's really crucial because it affects everyone in drastically different ways. So you have to be, you have to have a way to measure and a starting point with all of that. And, you know, out of reach of children is, that's a good baseline to start from. So
it's not hard.
It's got to be about responsible use and implementation.
But you know, you have to be careful with edibles. I had a brownie last week. I guess for me, I have a really sensitive reaction. I don't know what you call it. I get a strong reaction.
Intense experience.
Very intense. You know. It wasn't supposed to be like that. It's supposed to be something that relaxes you. And for me, I got more tense, you know, and I started seeing things around me and feeling things around me. It was interesting. I felt safe, but I realized, you know, if I was in a situation where I was operating something like a car, it would be very bad. And that's why I feel strongly about this, because not everybody is the same. Not everybody reacts in the same way. You can't predict that. And you sure don't want things like this getting in the hands of kids. So you have to be extremely careful, because when that happens, not only are you scaring the crap out of your kid, but you're also basically setting it back for everybody, because it makes things look really irresponsible and unsafe when they are safe. They absolutely are. You know, it's certainly no worse than kids getting into alcohol, and that happens all the time, and that's also an awful thing that has to be dealt with.
But it was never designed to be a free-for-all
when
people discussed legalization. Like,
absolutely not. All right, well, I guess that's pretty much everything we have to say tonight. OTW@2600.com is our email address. We'd love to hear from you. Please write to us with your thoughts.
Keep a smile on your face.
Exactly. Stay tuned for Finn. Have a good night.
So long.
Would it really happen?
Yes, I'm sure you can guess. I'm a big fan of those oddball mixes on The Clash's Sandinista album. And Shepherd's Delight is absolutely one of them. And you are listening to WUSB, Stony Brook.